Welcome to JS on Politics, our weekly look at what's happening in state government and politics. We have a full show for you today. We're going to start on the streets and discuss crime in Milwaukee and the political response to it. We'll take a look at Scott Walker's slippage in the polls and whether he's making up for it on the campaign trail. We'll break down the fetal tissue debate in Madison, and of course, we'll take some viewer questions. But first, let's go to the streets. Not literally, of course, we're still in our studio, but we're joined by Ashley Lutheran, our public safety reporter, Dan Bice, our watchdog columnist. And we're going to start with Ashley. You know, the discussion on crime in Milwaukee often seems to be driven by specific events or incidents that might feel especially outrageous or especially violent. We had an interesting story this week on a gentleman who was released, charged with two homicides, released on personal recognizance bond. Talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get into the fallout.
Sure. So, Greg, you're exactly right. This week I wrote a story about a man charged in a double homicide, and also he was charged with shooting and wounding three other people in that same incident. You know, prosecutors felt there was obviously enough to charge the case, but as time went on, the man filed a speedy trial demand, which in Wisconsin means a trial would have to start within 90 days of that request. When prosecutors asked for more time, they were getting more evidence back. They also asked to reduce the bond. The bond was set to a signature bond, $10,000 signature bond. So if he doesn't show up for future court proceedings, he has to pay that bond amount. But prosecutors are saying, well, we don't really have, we're having witnesses changing their stories. Some of the forensic evidence we're getting back as the investigation's ongoing is contradicting some of that information. And so because of that, as DA John Chisholm said, you know, the prosecutor's having very serious doubts about it.
Right. So we're having, of course, it's in the midst of a very violent summer, dramatic increase in homicide totals. And here you go, well, here's $10,000. You could put that on a credit card probably to get, you know, if you, with that issue. But what was the fallout? I know Alderman Bob Donovan talked about it. The chief talked about it, starting the sort of the finger pointing that goes on in these cases of who's responsible.
Yep, there certainly was a lot of that going on. It was probably one of the few times in recent months that Alderman Donovan and Chief Flynn have agreed on something. I know Chief Flynn has consistently told the public, media, council members that, you know, he understands that people are going to look at the police department and what actions they're taking to combat this crime, but he has consistently called for people to examine other parts of the criminal justice system, including the court system. And so I think when he, you know, he was on talk radio expressing that, you know, he, at that point when he was talking, I don't think that there was a full reporting at that point as to why this decision was made and how it came about, but obviously he called it very disheartening to see this type of suspect released.
Talk about some of the backstory here and what's going on, because you know, if Donovan running for mayor, you've got all these other machinations in the background.
So he's not just another alderman who's discussing this issue. He's someone who wants to run for mayor, is running for mayor, doesn't have a lot of money. He's being, in terms of the amount of money he has, Mayor Barrett has $20 for every dollar that Alderman Donovan has. So it's important for him to keep his name out there. And each of these incidents he jumps on to, and he's able to generate free media. He gets on the front page of the paper. He ends up on the TV news and everything else. I mean, it's an opportunity for him to try to contrast himself with Tom Barrett, and that's going to continue until the election next year.
Right. Well, do you think, guys, is this a potent issue? I mean, we seem to have these headlines often. We had a few weeks ago the elderly woman who was raped after getting off the bus and had to wait for hours and hours for the police to return. We've got, you know, 13-year-olds being shot after the fireworks. Is this something that, you know, for Donovan can draw votes and become
an important issue? It's happening during the summer, and a lot of people aren't tuned in right now. So, but it is an ongoing problem, So it's something that's going to keep on being brought up. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. There's talk that Senator Lena Taylor is going to get into the race, too. So you would have two people criticizing Barrett, one from the left and one from the right. And it's expected that a third-party group will come in and use these issues to drive up Mayor Barrett's negatives, to try to make him vulnerable. I mean, he has a very large war chest. You know, it's expected that he's going to win, but this is the way to go about beating him.
Yeah, well, let's talk about one last point here. There's a couple things announced in the past few weeks, which what strikes me is, so they'll announce, the department and officials will say, there's not a big problem with our pursuit policy, but then they'll announce, here's our new Batman tool to help get people who are fleeing the case. Right? We're doing okay with prosecution, but here's our special gun prosecution unit that we're sort of reviving this new effort. What's been the reaction to those sorts of things that they're pushing now to try to get their handle on what's going on?
Specifically with the Star Chase technology, the GPS trackers for fleeing cars, the department says that's something they've been looking at since May.
This is the Batman thing, right? Yes. They shoot it and it lands on the car,
right.
And now they know
there's
where the car is.
There's an adhesive.
Going.
Yeah. There are some real concerns about cost. Right about $5,000 for a unit. There's some concerns about accuracy. There's going to need to be some training on how you can use it in some of the reports I've read. And again, this is still pretty fairly new technology in that it's not widespread at this point. It's not widespread usage across the country. And so the reports that I've read talking to officers who have used it, they've had some trouble getting it to fire accurately. It has a warm-up period, so sometimes when they think they're going to use it, they warm it up, but then the car's already gone,
right.
Or maybe they think they're able to pull the car over, and then it kind of slows down, and they have to restart it, and it's not able to fire when they want it to.
Yeah, so just briefly, do you see any sort of disconnect at all here on the one hand, saying, well, this isn't a big issue, everything's under control, and then you see these proposals and initiatives to address the issue that's under control?
Sure, it's a hard thing for, Alderman Donovan doesn't have to put together a program and say, this is what my crime proposal is. He's able to jump onto each incident and put them together and say that we have a problem. The mayor, meanwhile, has to make the case that things are, under control to some degree. But clearly, the number of murders is up and crime is certainly a problem right now.
All right, so that's where we're going to leave this part of our discussion, and we're going to go now to a taped segment looking at Scott Walker and his position in the polls. We're joined now by Craig Gilbert, our Washington bureau chief, to talk about the polls and the debate a week later. So, Craig, it's been a week since that Republican debate we talked about last week. Impressions have settled in a little bit. How have they, turned out in the polls in terms of how Scott Walker is faring nationally?
Well, there's a suggestion in the polling that we've seen so far that he not only didn't get a bounce out of the debate, but he may have lost some ground. I mean, it's not the quantity and quality of polling you'd like to see yet. A lot of the national polls that have been done since the debate have been internet and robocalls. And so it's kind of a motley collection of data. There have been three Iowa polls done since the debate. Again, different methods, different quality. The latest one, CNN, has Walker actually slipping into third place in Iowa behind Donald Trump and Ben Carson. The other two have Trump leading Walker in Iowa. Walker has been leading the polls in Iowa pretty consistently until now, so that's a change. I don't think Walker's underlying numbers have really changed. He's still got a really nice, lopsided favorability rating in Iowa. But I think the fact that he didn't make a strong impression in the debate, may turn out to be, in the short term, a negative for him.
Yeah, so is this a case where his numbers have actually declined a little bit, or is it simply that others have sort of jumped up and maybe gotten a bigger, bigger bounce than the governor?
Yeah, it may be a little bit of both. I mean, you've got kind of a flattening of the race in some of the polling where the leaders, Jeb Bush, Donald Trump, and Scott Walker have slipped a little bit. And some people from the second tier are percolating up, like Carson and Carly Fiorina, maybe Marco Rubio. I mean, there's so many caveats that come with this discussion of the polling because, A, it's so early in the process, and B, this sort of grab bag of polls, some of which are pretty poor, some of which are better. And then there's just the question of sort of what the polls are measuring at this point in time. I mean, a lot of the polls are capturing casual voters who are not people who are going to end up voting in the primaries and caucuses.
All right. So some of the instant punditry the morning and after the debate and even the night of was that this was a poor showing by Donald Trump and he, some of the comments with Megyn Kelly, the Fox News host. I mean, does it surprise you that Donald Trump hasn't seen any decline in the polls apparently since the debate?
Well, it's even hard to say that because some of the polls that we're seeing now that are putting Trump ahead haven't polled in a while, so we don't know. It's possible that Trump actually has lost ground in some of these polls but is still ahead of where he was 2 months ago, so it looks like he's continuing to gain. Again, Trump is still It's surprising some people that he's not showing more slippage. But the fundamentals for Donald Trump remain really bad in the sense that, you know, he's got high negatives. Even though in a state like Iowa he's leading in some of these polls, nobody thinks he's going to win the Iowa caucuses because he doesn't have an organization and because that core, that small activist core of Republican caucus goers who are actually going to determine the Iowa caucuses, it's hard to imagine Donald Trump necessarily being their favorite candidate. So, you know, you have to take all that stuff into account when you call Donald Trump the front runner. It's with a big asterisk.
All right. Let's take a minute to look at a story you have coming on Sunday that looks at Governor Walker and some of the encounters he's had with protesters on the campaign trail. I know that you saw this, I think, in Philadelphia when you were with the governor. Is this sort of kind of a unique feature for him right now? That I can't imagine that Ben Carson's drawing lots of protesters as he travels the country.
Yeah, it's really part of Scott Walker's package that he gets protests. He's certainly, you know, had a long history of that in Wisconsin. It's following him around. I was at an event in Cleveland the day after the debate, a well-known local deli in town where there were 60 protesters, mostly union protesters. They were organized. They had a megaphone. They had, two of them were on stilts. They had signs. They were chanting. You could hear them inside the deli where all the reporters and TV cameras were, you know, were talking to Scott Walker. He had to, there were nine cops outside kind of cordoning off his exit so he could get away after the event. I don't think this necessarily phases him because he's, you know, he had 100,000 protesters in Madison. He's used to that. But it's a little bit peculiar to his campaign. And I think, you know, it's a double-edged sword. It kind of creates a little bit of a sense of anarchy where it happens around his campaign. But it also, he wears it as a badge of honor. I mean, it's really part of his identity. He actually brings up all the time in his speeches the 100,000 protesters in Madison. So he's not bashful about it, and I think they think it helps them in their messaging to Republican primary voters.
I mean, it seems in some respects it'd be sort of the ultimate kind of prop on the campaign trail because you can say, look, the unions are still after me, the protesters are still there, because you can just point to the crowd at the back of the room or outside the building. That, I mean, it just seems to be a real unique, you know, circumstance for the governor.
No, I think he likes talking about it. In fact, you know, toward the end of the debate in Cleveland, in response to a question about God, he brought up the protesters. And he brought up the protesters by way of saying that this was a kind of a crucible for him to undergo, and also by way of saying, arguing that his response to the protests he described as measured, and he was sort of touting that as an attribute of his, that he can handle this kind of adversity with an even keel.
All right. Well, we'll look for that story Sunday, and thanks for joining us today, Craig.
It's a pleasure.
All right. We're back live to continue our discussion. We have a special guest with us, Dee Hall of the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, a longtime reporter from the State Journal, is in town and in our building today, so we grabbed her and threw her on the set here. We've got Dan is with us, and we have Jason Stein in Madison. And we're going to start with Jason, looking at the governor and kind of how he's doing on the campaign trail. He's down in Illinois today, but it's a week after the debate. There was some concern about the polls. He didn't, you know, fare particularly well there. Jason, what's your sense of what he's doing or needs to do to sort of, you know, regain that that momentum there or that footing he had earlier?
Sure, Greg. Well, the debate was a little bump in the road for his presidential campaign. We'll ask him about it today when he's down in Illinois, but I suspect what he's going to say, this would be typical for him to say, is, look, guys, it's August. We're still something like a half a year away from, you know, voting in the early states. There's still a lot of time for a lot of things to happen. Now, I mean, as far as the polls go, you did see that he was, I believe, the only major candidate to see a drop in every one of the half dozen polls in Iowa and New Hampshire that came out after the debates. So, I mean, you know, there was definitely some impact there. I suspect a lot of that is the fact that this is driven a lot by name ID right now. In other words, you poll well if the voters know who you are. during the debates, he just didn't use all of the time that he was given and didn't really interject himself in the debate a lot. So I think there he just didn't get a chance to get on voters' radar screens as much as, say, Carly Fiorina or, you know, some others like Marco Rubio did.
It was just a very cautious, defensive appearance, as we said last week, that they were trying not to make a bad impression and end up making no impression during the debate. And the result is he's lost ground. And I'm sure there's some frustration on his part because all of the attention has gone to Trump. And that attention and the number of support has moved over to Trump as well.
Yeah, but his, I mean, Governor Walker is obviously a very experienced politician. He's got a longer range view, I'm sure, of just he historically will take a message and he'll stick to it. And that seems to be what he's doing right now, just saying, well, we're focusing on Hillary. I'm not going to attack my primary opponents. I mean, how do you think he's doing, Dee?
Well, I don't have an opinion about how he's doing at this point because I do think it is very far out. And, you know, the idea of Donald Trump winning the nomination, which right according to the polls right now, he would be the one. I mean, I think people would be surprised 6 months from now if he is still on top. So it's hard to say. There's probably a strategy there. It's a strategy that maybe did not work that well for him this time around. But maybe there's something more to it and it worked just fine. Maybe he's trying to lower expectations. Who knows? And just sort of be part of the pack and then sprint near the end. It's really hard to say.
I think that the Trump effect isn't so much that he's going to win the nomination. It reshuffles the deck. The two people who seem to come out pretty well as a result of Trump's entry into the race are Carly Fiorina, who did well in the debate, and Marco Rubio, who also did well in the debate. Both of them asserted themselves. I think it's an indication that the cautious approach that got Walker through the first debate is not the sort of performance that he needs next time or the time after that.
Right. Yeah. And one of the things Craig pointed out in his segment was that, I mean, these polls are so early, and with Iowa in particular, you have to drill down to that narrow, narrow group of who's going to actually get out of their house in January or February and go to the caucuses and vote, not sort of this broader collection. So, Jason, I want to ask you about one of the other things where Walker was in the news this week was the signing the Bucks Arena measure, and some of the criticism he's getting is from the right on that. So it's sort of a either way he wasn't going to win, I guess. But I mean, what are we hearing and seeing from folks saying, well, he shouldn't have really gotten behind public financing as he did.
Right, and I would just add on the subject of Scott Walker that he. You know, as particularly in early states like Iowa, which is caucus state, all the candidates need organization to get people out to the polls. Scott Walker has gotten a number of early endorsements in Iowa and some other early states, whereas, you know, somebody like Trump does not have that kind of actual on-the-ground organization, and that difference will tell in the months to come. As far as the Bucks Arena, obviously, that was going to be a difficult one for any politician. I mean, on the one hand, you have the idea of losing this professional sports team. On the other hand, you have the idea of providing $250 million in public funds to a team that's owned by billionaires. So, you know, this is just one, I think, where any elected official is going to take a few lumps and move on.
I think Walker should be happy that his original proposal didn't fly, because his original proposal would have put $220 million from the state into
right,
the deal.
More from the state.
It ends up being $55 million with the move to the Wisconsin Center District and to the county, Milwaukee County, picking up that cost. So I think, he's fortunate that the Assembly Speaker Voss and Majority Leader Fitzgerald stepped in and cut the amount that the state was borrowing to pay for this.
Yeah, do you think this is something, though, that we'll hear his primary opponents in future debates or future encounters and exchanges say, you know, you're not a true conservative, or if I were in your spot, I would never give money to billionaires? Is this a line we could expect to
possibly, but I think there's a lot of support for professional sports teams. That seems to be in a sort of almost a different category of public spending, that there's a lot of hometown rallying, and that it's more popular among even people who are conservative to keep the hometown team there to, you know, use it as an economic boost. So,
and as I understand it, there are five Wisconsin legislators who voted for borrowing or public funds for the Packers, for Lambeau Field, for Miller Park. and for the Bucks Arena, and all five are Republicans. So
it's they hit the trifecta.
where you end
up
supporting all the way
in
through.
The state, we could call it the trifecta.
If there is going to, if there is criticism, I would guess it would come from the far right, like Ted Cruz or somebody like that.
All right, well, let's shift to one of our last topics here, which is the fetal tissue debate in Madison, and we'll start with Jason again on this because he's written several of the stories about it. First, can you just set the table for us, Jason? Why is this debate coming up, and where do you sort of see it going in the short term?
Sure. You've had some controversial videos about Planned Parenthood officials in California discussing the transfers of fetal tissues for research. And that has actually given a lot of momentum to a bill in the state legislature that for 6 years now, it failed in two previous sessions, but now it's clearly got a lot of momentum and it's going to pass in some form. The way things look right now, it's looking that it will allow most research involving fetal tissue to continue, but in Wisconsin, but that there will be at least some research at UW-Madison that involves fetal tissue that will be a felony going forward and will be banned in the state.
Yeah, well, let's talk. When we talked about this a week or two ago, we said the immediate response was, well, this doesn't happen here in terms of the selling of tissues or even the donating from the Planned Parenthood facilities here. But this is a big issue at UW-Madison. You know, they're home to stem cell research. Many millions of dollars come in based on this research. Where do you guys see this going?
Well, it's a tough one for Walker because, of course, he's always said Wisconsin's open for business. And what we're talking about is tens of millions of research dollars that come into the UW-Madison and possibly other locations that, in fact, use these type of tissues in their research. And so the question is, are you going to draw a hard line and say, I don't really care what happens with these research dollars, I have this moral objection to the use of these tissues, or do you take a more pragmatic approach? And I think right now, especially as he's trying to get these early primary voters who are very conservative, it's a tough issue for him, I think.
Well, he's declined to state his position on it, and so it's something that he's not comfortable with it. And it's interesting, for someone who's considered very decisive and who portrays himself as a decisive person, there are a number of issues like this that stack up where he doesn't come forward with a proposal. It becomes a big issue, and he initially is reluctant to stay a position. There was right to work, same-sex marriage, where he refused to state his position before, and the 20-month abortion bill, the 20-week abortion bill. I'm assuming, his focus is not so much on, you were explaining it as a policy decision. I don't think it's so much a policy decision. It's a political decision for him right now. He's in the middle of a presidential campaign. But at the same time, he doesn't want to have businesses saying that they are going to leave as a result.
Jason, let me ask you this point, because some of these other ones, like the 20-week abortion ban and things, they've come up and they've had strong support and pretty readily passed. Do you see any reason that this one would be different in terms of, are there Republicans who are saying they can't support this the way it's written, or that it needs to be drawn up differently?
Sure. I think that he's clearly going to support the overall bill. Like most Republicans, the governor is very concerned about the videos and has a long time, pro-life stance. So, and he said, obviously, that he's supportive of doing something. I mean, where he has really been reluctant to talk about is obviously this narrower issue of medical research, of what is better to do, allow this research into things like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's to continue, or to, ban it. I think the practical effect of that is that it takes an issue that on its face or largest level has a lot of support for banning that sort of fetal tissue transfers, and it muddies it up because some people will obviously want to see medical research that could save lives continue.
All right. We're going to shift now to our viewer questions, and there's actually one that just came in on this topic, so we're going to take a closer look at it. This is from Dennis, who says, how does the legislature intend to support stem cell research in light of their intent to ban fetal tissue use? It's clear to this point that science or any advancement of knowledge is opposed by this legislature. Dan, do you see a way that they can sort of carve this out where they can get their
what they're trying to do now, and Jason would probably know better than I would, that they're setting up this line saying any tissue they received before 2010, is that right, Jason?
That's right.
That they would be allowed to use that, but nothing since 2010. Again, I mean, that's a compromise that they're trying to work with, but the medical community doesn't seem very happy with that.
Okay. I will say that when Walker was first elected, there was some concern, I think, among scientific researchers that he would wade into the stem cell issue when he was first elected, and he just very much stayed away from that. It became a non-issue when he was elected.
All right, let's hit a couple more of these questions. This one was from a reader and a viewer, because they're reading it as they submit it, but they're viewing it, I hope, as they watch it, which is from No Walker, who says, so Walker has fallen in...
No, K-N-O-W? Or
no, this is N-O Walker. That's an important point, thank you. The question is, so Walker has fallen in the polls. Realistically, can he get back in it, or did he miss his chance to catch a wave at the debate last week? Dee, what do you think?
Well, I think these things are so fluid at this stage. I mean, I am not a grand political wizard or anything, but I just know, I've been a lot on this earth for several decades, and it seems like people who seem like the shoo-in, 6-8 months before the first polling are barely heard from again sometimes. I'm not saying he's in that category. I'm just saying I don't feel comfortable predicting anything like that.
I think we have to wait until the Trump effect is through so we can see where everything shakes out. We know that before Trump emerged as a popular candidate, there were three candidates who were considered the likely nominees. That was Bush, Rubio, and Walker. And there's been some shuffling around. I still think those three have the major organization, and they have the money right now. So I don't think he's been knocked out. I just think it was an underwhelming performance.
All right, I'm going to throw one out to Jason. This is from James, who says, forget about Walker and the champion steer. So I think they're referring to the state fair last night. Says, how is he going to fare on the soapbox in Iowa? And this is a particular thing at the Iowa State Fair where everybody comes in, they stand on a soapbox and make their case. Jason, what do you think how is he going to do in Iowa?
Right. So in these early primary states where retail politics is so important, you have all these rituals that are not so familiar to us here in Wisconsin. Scott Walker is going to be partaking in one of those on Monday morning. He'll be down there, speaking to state crowd fairs who are going to be sitting on hay bales and listening to him. I mean, I think this is a chance for him, because obviously there are going to be a number of other presidential candidates coming through the state fair. This is a chance for him, number one, to make up a little bit of ground that he's lost in the past couple weeks in Iowa. And it's also, a chance for unexpected things to happen, because unlike most carefully controlled partisan primary type events where you don't have, it's all Democrats or all Republicans, it's a bipartisan mix at the Iowa State Fair, and you can get heckled and there can be all sorts of unexpected things happen. So, we've got to look out for those, too.
All right. You guys have both covered Walker and observed him over the years. How do you think he fares as a sort of that retail politician rather than the debater and the wholesale politician?
Yeah, I thought he did pretty well in his announcement when he got up and gave the extemporaneous speech on announcing that he was running for president. I think he's much better at that today than he used to be. He's still not a dynamic speaker. But on the other hand, he's not the sort of person who's going to make any major mistakes.
All right. Scott Walker, baby kisser, how do we rate him? Handshaker, back slapper,
I mean, he's a divisive character. Some people really love him. They really believe that his position is almost ordained. On the other hand, some people really, really dislike him, and probably over some of the same traits. So it's really, really hard to say. I mean, obviously, he has a very solid and sizable following in Wisconsin, and they're not going to change their minds about him, I think, almost no matter what he does or says.
All right, that's where we'll leave it today. A note about our upcoming weeks. We're going to take off for next week in terms of a video presentation. Dan, though, will be at his keyboard slaving away, trying to answer all of your questions in
this keyboard.
More conventional chat. I don't know if it'll be this keyboard. Maybe we'll at least sit at your desk. You won't have to sit in the studio to do it. But we'll be back in 2 weeks with our regular video show, and we hope to see you then.